Undisciplined is a collaboration between African and African-American studies at the University of Arkansas and KUAF.
The podcast provides a peek into the complex issues that affects our interconnected world.
Taking the interdisciplinary approach of African and African-American studies to the classroom, into the community, onto the airwaves, and beyond. I am your host, Dr. Karee Banton, and for this sixth season, I have a new co-host,
Carrie Nisia Connor.
Let's get into it. Well, welcome back, everyone, to a whole new semester and a whole new show. I hope you guys had a wonderful break and you were ready to get into some new things and to learn some new stuff that we've been getting into here at the Undisciplined Podcast. And today is very special because we are introducing a new co-host. I would love to introduce this co-host to you and kind of, you know, have you meet her virtually. Well, her name is Karee Nisia Elizabeth Connor, and she's a military rat.
I am.
And was born in Germany?
Yes.
It's sprechen Sie Deutsch?
No.
Oh.
Bitte.
Und bitte. And she is a new professor here in the COHAP college, who focuses on education policy, anti-racist, and project-based curriculums, particularly in social studies. She's done her doctoral work on, you know, in curriculum instruction. She considers herself a curriculum theorist. Oftentimes, you can find her decolonizing curriculum. And she's taken that task here to us at the University of Arkansas. Well, I know that you guys are as curious as I am, as I was getting to know Karee Nisia myself, about who she is and how did she come to the University of Arkansas and to be interested in these kinds of things. And if she's anything like me, too, I know that she's not just an academic girl, that she's interested in a variety of other things that's going to fuel the kinds of conversations that we have here on the Undisciplined Podcast. So, Karee Nisia.
Hi.
When people meet you, what's the first thing you want them to know about you?
The first thing, don't let the RBF fool you. I'm pretty kind and I like to have fun. As much as I love to participate in scholarship and service, I'm all about a good time and structuring that good time. So don't let it fool you.
Can you tell the people, the congregation, what RBF is?
Resting bitch face.
Oh, wow. You know, some of the times we have to break down these LOLs. Mm-hmm. I saw a whole list the other day on social media. I was like, thank this person doing the right Lord's work.
TF is that?
Yes. So you were born in Germany.
Frankfurt, yeah. Frankfurt am Main, Germany.
How long did you stay there?
We were there for about 2 years. Uh-huh. My father was in the Army, and we were there for 2 years, and then we came to Fort Hood, Texas, which is now known as Fort Cavazos.
Ah.
Yeah. We were renamed because General Bell Hood, you know, the, I was going to say conservative. Now I can't think of Confederate. Okay. The Confederate general. And so they renamed it, and it was a part of this larger portion of military bases that they renamed that were formerly named after Confederate soldiers to more represent more of the ideals that the Army is moving towards, which is inclusion and diversity. So Cavazos now.
Yeah, so you're a Texas girl.
I am. I love Texas.
So I'm an island girl, and you're a Texas girl. What is Texas about you?
Mm. my music, slow, loud, and banging. Oh, all my, in my trunk full of funk. I ain't never been a punk.
Who, Mike Jones?
Who? No, give another guess. One last guess. No. No. Come on. Come on.
Megan Thee Stallion.
No, it's not a woman. I should have recorded a woman since this one.
Paul Wall.
Nope. Let's see what other Texas artists y'all know.
Twista.
He's from Chicago. his name begins with the last letter in the alphabet.
Gorilla Grills.
That's funny. Zero. Zero.
That's, I've never heard of that mm-hmm. artist before.
Okay. Yes.
Mm. Okay.
But yeah, my music, I'd say what I love about Texas is that you're going to, especially in Houston, you have the Houston-Dallas conversation, and those different populations of folks. But Houston, you're going to get like that Southern kind of hospitality, along with that also you don't want to mess with me type of thing. And I don't mess with Texas, but we'll treat you nice, we'll treat you friendly, we'll welcome you, we'll take good care of you, but we don't put up with no stuff. So that's probably what Texas is about. Me, my mama's from Texas. She's a 7th generation Wacoan, and so that was awesome for me to kind of attend Baylor University in Waco, Texas, where a lot of my family began, you know, my great-grandfather actually died on campus at Baylor building the athletic complex. And so when I had the opportunity to go to Baylor and they were going to be funding my education as well as paying me a decent salary, I was like, okay, this is reparations. This is coming back around for the insurance, the failure to receive insurance for his death.
Really?
Yeah, like, you know, to have that kind of closure of acknowledgement. And so I was like, I have to say yes to Baylor, even though I had other options for my PhD. I have to say yes to Baylor because of the family aspect and keeping that generational wealth in the family.
Okay, that's a good reason. I agree.
So Texas, yeah. It's in my DNA.
So you in Texas, Beyonce. I should have said Beyonce. No, Beyonce's Louisiana.
She's Houston. Her mama from Louisiana.
Yeah, okay. Mix the Texas with the Creole.
Make it Texas Bama.
Okay,
I like my baby that's hair right. With baby okay. hair and afro specs.
That's right. Okay, so fill in the rap quiz. So she's gonna be the rap reference of the two of us. And I thought actually that was my expertise at one point. But so you went to Baylor, mm-hmm. you know, what made you go into education? Mm-hmm. Why not a turnification? Well, you know, why not say, you know, why didn't you study, you know, accounting or, mm-hmm. you know, what's so attractive or about education for you?
It was easy to not go into accounting because I really believed the idea that I wasn't good at math at a very young age.
We have that in common.
But you know what? Anyway, so the story is this. I never, ever wanted to go to college. I never intended to go to college.
Word.
I wanted to write Dear John letters to my husband as he was overseas.
In the military
and send care boxes. I wanted to be a military wife.
Wow. Why?
Well, all the women, well, my mom and my sister, they were military wives. And then growing up in a military town, you know, that's the strongest image of a woman that you can have. You know, she is the Rosie Riveter of real life.
Right.
You know, the husband's father, sons are away. And so she has to get under the sink and fix the sink or unclog things or, you know, keep the household in order while the husband's away. So to me, there was no stronger image and no greater work that you can do than to raise a family and to take care of that family and to honor your husband and his honoring of you through his sacrifice.
So you could have almost been on Military Wives.
Facts. I really could have, but
whoa, whoa, could have been a would have been a movie star had you stuck to your initial interest.
You're right, you know, but my lack of dating life made that very difficult. I was never the girl in high school that had boyfriends or anything like that, but I was involved in like academic organizations, right. Was president thereof, and you know,
what
I got
kind of organizations?
Business Professionals of America, BPA. Shout out! Really, BPA opened up my eyes and my life. You know, I got involved and ended up becoming president and regional president.
That is so amazing.
And my first time getting on a plane was to go to Dallas from Killeen, which is like a 45-minute flight.
Oh my goodness.
And it was my first time seeing large buildings, like huge, tall. Ooh. And so it just opened up my eyes.
So you say you grew up in Waco, right?
No, I grew up in Killeen.
In Killeen. Fort Hood, Killeen. That's very small?
It's a small town city, you know, like it has the industrial complex that the mm-hmm. military provides, but you're not going to see tall buildings or wide buildings or industry there.
So I could tell you, too, about my first time. I came to the United States, I believe, when I was 14 years old.
Okay, wow.
But the first time I came to school here was in 2001.
Mm.
So I would, you know, Jamaicans go back and forth to Miami, which is Jamaica North.
Mm, okay. Didn't right? know. Okay.
Well, Miami is Caribbean North. You have little Haiti, little Cuba, little Jamaica. All those different Caribbean places are in Florida, especially South Florida.
Okay.
Not Alabama South, which
I
is North Florida.
I ain't spent much time there, so I wouldn't know. Okay.
Yeah. We'll check it out one day. I'm going to take you.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But when I came to the United States in 2001, I got a scholarship to go to university in West Virginia.
Ooh, Mountain Mama.
Whoa. I was like, where's the real America? It's on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
The real stand-up. Uncle Phil.
So it's very interesting, right? You know, you're talking about what you wanted to be mm-hmm. when you were a little girl and a mm-hmm. military wife and how that could inform our vision for the future.
Yeah.
And for me, coming to the United States in 2001, looking for the real America.
Mm. What was the real America to you, though?
The real America was New York. Mm. Like, whatever is pictured on movies and shows mm-hmm. that we saw in Jamaica. So Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Cosby Show, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. And my coach picks me up. I fly into Maryland. My coach lives in Sandy Springs, I think, picks me up and drives me all those hours to West Virginia. Mm. It was the first time I was ever smelling skunk.
Oh, my. Like, what is, who is that?
No, people talk about coming to America, right? You guys have seen the movie and it mm-hmm. tried to highlight all the different things, but that kind of a olfactory
yes.
exchange
uh-huh.
was very interesting. Like, what is that?
I know that. Who is smelling like that up in here?
Okay. No, this was on the highway and I'm smelling it.
Right, but when it gets into the car, Who let that one lose?
I had never
y'all bow
that
in America
before in life, and I was like, wow. And so it, you know, later on when I was reflecting, I was like, oh wow, I'd never seen a skunk before in Jamaica. And just a final point. In Jamaica, we have this you know, this thing that if you ever saw a mongoose running across a road. If it runs across and you're walking down the road and it goes straight across, keep going where you're going. But if it turns back and go back, you should turn back and go back home.
Wow. So, like a black cat kind of thing.
When I came here, I thought a skunk was a mongoose.
No.
So I was always observing what the skunk was
doing. I've never seen a mongoose.
Yeah, so mongoose.
There's a bike.
The mongoose was brought to Jamaica by sugarcane planters to get the snakes out of the cane field.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so they look alike, like skunks.
That's what I thought.
Okay.
Maybe they don't.
It's like, oh, y'all got these here too.
I was just like, but it tells you something, right, about mobility. You being from Germany and then coming to Fort Hood, Killeen. Mm-hmm. You know, and how all of these different things, and me being from Jamaica and bringing my Jamaican sensibility and the things that are familiar, right? How I'm recalibrating, you know, as I enter these new spaces.
No, I think that's important, though, new spaces, you know, and how new spaces really does expand your capacity to dream and what you can believe that you might be able to do in the space that you're currently in, or if you move on to a new space. And so that was what was important for me in that experience of going to a Dallas with BPA, was it was my first exposure to life outside of Killeen.
Right.
Other than going to like Lexington, Kentucky, which is kind of like another Killeen in terms of access to different amenities. And, you know, it would kind of become the spark that once I experienced one of the greatest tragedies in my life, which is my sister ended up passing away my senior year of high school. Just suddenly, you know, we had Thanksgiving dinner at her house. It was her first time cooking Thanksgiving dinner for the family. And I remember us singing "Me and You, Us Never Part," and like, and we really had this beautiful, beautiful goodbye. Like, it was so lovely to be able to say goodbye to my sister that way. And I left that night, went Black Friday shopping, laid my head down, and woke up to my whole family bursting through my door, and like, "We've been looking for you. We've been looking for you." And come to find out my sister had passed away in the middle of the night.
In her sleep.
So sorry. She had a hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, so make sure you get your cardiograms and you're taking care of your heart health, and make sure your doctors are taking care of your heart health with you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And that's so important for us as
for
two
sure.
Black women, right?
Yes.
Thinking about the relationship of race and the medical system and underdiagnosis and lack of, you know, the kinds of attention that we might need. So sorry to hear about that.
And we
that.
Wait so late, and partly because of insurance, right? You know, insurance won't cover, you know, cervical exams to your 40, or you can't get colonoscopies until you're 40, or, you know, 35 or something like that. And so for me, it has been something, through the military, I've been fortunate to have excellent health care. And so I've been exposed to the healthcare system for a long time. And so I try as I can, as much as I can, to be proactive. And so I've had colonoscopy since I was 25 because my father had colon cancer. And then I've been getting my pap smears and cervical exams since as early as, you know, you can get a well woman's exam in Texas. You know, I've had cardiograms, and, you know, recently I even had my first mammogram because I have extensive history of breast cancer on both sides of my family.
Wow.
And they found a lump. And it turns out it's benign, but it was a tumor. And so recently I had to have that removed. And so, like, knowledge is power, and it's scary to go into hospitals. It's scary to do these things, especially if you don't, you know, have anybody with you that you can trust. And the knowledge is so convoluted sometimes of how they express things. But, you know, even if you sometimes have to pay out of pocket and make that sacrifice, or, you know, go into a little bit of medical debt, I think health is wealth. So
it's very interesting, right? How we never quite think about, you know, you go to the doctor routinely and you have to fill out those family histories.
Yeah.
And you never take it seriously until it's like something.
It's in you.
Yeah, I've had those kinds of experiences myself, and as a historian, it makes me really think. Like, I never thought, like, when you're like, "Oh, is anyone in your family have a history of this or that?" And you never thought about it until it's in a moment where it's like, "Oh, there might be something,"
right?
Where you have to understand that history, and you have to understand the heritage, and you're like, "Oh my God, even though I don't want to talk to these people, I must."
Yes.
I must. You know, this heritage is important because they are bound up with me.
You
know?
Say that again.
We understand that all of us in here, we were in our grandmother's uterus because the egg of our mother was already in her. At the time of when our grandmother conceived her.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, "Oh my God, I can't stand these family reunions." But
but we have to collect our family oral histories when it comes to health. And so oral histories is something that I'm very passionate about. Because, you know, I know a lot of us have trauma with our families. You know, I wasn't treated well. I was the black sheep. I was abused. You know, there's so many different familial traumas that we experience. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, for me, listening to my family talk about their experiences and their history and what they've seen in life has helped me to humanize them and see them,
right.
see them as more than just my mother and father, but they are a human being even before I was thought to come into the world.
And it's when these things stay in the shadows that they actually do more harm.
Yeah.
You realize that once they're actually expressed and articulated, that, as you say, they do that very important work of mm-hmm. like validating whatever concern you may have mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe creating that connection mm-hmm. and bond and doing all of that kind of stuff. So that's interesting. Yeah. But, you know, you were at the travel and, you yeah. know, how important that travel was for you leaving, yeah. you know, being girl boss at that early age, girl president, you know, that travel, as Mark Twain says, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, mm-hmm. and narrow-mindedness, mm-hmm. right? And many of our people need it sorely on these accounts. Broad, wholesome, charitable views of men and things cannot be acquired by vegetating in one little corner of the earth Powerful. All one's lifetime.
Wow, I love you know? That quote.
Yeah, so you were traveling, and all the while that is expanding you. So you move from mm-hmm. your high school, you get to Baylor, you doing your PhD now, you are becoming an educator. Mm-hmm. What's informing, mm-hmm. you know, the kinds of things that you're deciding to take up in your mm-hmm. research and your practice?
Yeah. You know, I recognize that I have so much privilege.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I grew up a semi-middle class black girl. You know, whether my parents had money that was liquid or credit, they had access to things. And so for me, it's about sharing what I have with others so that they can also feel the empowerment and share the space and amplify their voices with me. Because I really believe, you know, one of my favorite poems is by Dr. Maya Angelou. Mm-hmm. You know, I was lying last night thinking about how I might find my soul a home. One where water is not thirsty and bread loaf is not stone. And I came up with one thing, and I don't believe that I'm wrong. And it's that nobody, but nobody can make it out here alone.
Oh, wow. All right. Okay. Saul Williams.
And so that's what drives me. You know, like, I think I grew up in high school kind of feeling like a sense of loneliness of being like an not the popular girl, feeling like an outsider, feeling excluded, and also being a plus size woman, feeling excluded. And so dealing with these feelings of loneliness and how do I actually find confidence and pride and self-esteem in myself that is not rooted in other people's affirmation. Mm-hmm. And so sharing a little bit of what I have is the hope that others will feel that same empowerment of wanting to share a little bit of what they have with other folks mm-hmm. so that other people don't feel alone and so that other people can feel empowered, and hopefully we will stop being so dehumanizing to mm-hmm. one another.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
But in the meantime, in between time, you know, so once my sister passed away, I decided, okay, you know what, I got a taste of the world, and now I want to go and experience it a little bit more, because I feel like my sister.
You know, you feel like you got to live.
Yeah, I feel like I got to live for her. Like, the rest of her life is in me, and the rest of her life is in her children. She had four children at the time of her death.
Really?
She was 15 years older than me. So she was also like a mom in a way.
Right.
You know? And so, you know, I'm like, okay, now these are my children now. I'm their godmom, and I have to go and make a living for us and myself. And so, but I also dealt with that guilt of leaving them, you know, so soon. She died in November, and I left off for college in July of that following year. And so, you know, packed up my car and my mom and dad and I went down, and I couldn't even set up my dorm room. I just laid there, and my mom just blessed me with her service to be able to put my dorm room together. And the first year, I almost failed out because I didn't have the skills. I was grieving. I didn't know how to do school in this capacity. And so I was like, okay, well.
It's like you didn't know where to find resources.
Resources. Or an example.
Or how to study or what was expected of you.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. How to study, when to study, how to balance my time and my newfound freedom. you know, like I didn't have those things, and I didn't necessarily have the self-belief to, especially in math. When I started college, I had to take remedial math courses, but it was good for me because that was when I realized it wasn't that I was bad at math. I just wasn't practicing it enough, you know, and had I not accepted that stereotype, I'm a girl, I'm black, and I'm bad at math, that maybe perhaps I would have been an accountant. But when I, you know, I, that first year almost failing out and living the reality that I might have to go home if I don't do well here.
How did you turn it around?
Luckily, by God's grace, I was able to attach myself with people who modeled the type of skills that I needed. And
were these fellow students?
Fellow students, yeah. Became my best friend. He was valedictorian and had excellent study habits and of great sound character as well. And so I was able to, you know, kind of glean some of those skills. And so I ended up declaring my major in political science because I was like, I want to be a senator or a congresswoman. And I served in that capacity. I was a congressional intern for Al Green. I worked for the mayor pro tem at City Hall in Houston. And at the end of those internships, though, I realized, I was like, I don't think change happens fast enough here.
Stay tuned for more on discipline after this commercial break.
I'm Denisha Simpson.
And I'm Joy McGowan.
And we are the co-host to the Resilient Black Women podcast. Our podcast is all about demystifying mental health for Black women, women of color, and women everywhere.
You can learn more about our work with our nonprofit and our podcast by visiting resilientblackwomen.org.
You can also listen to our podcast at KUAF.com or subscribe to our podcast on any streaming platform.
Welcome back. Okay, so now we're getting to the bedrock.
Yes.
You want to drive change.
Mm-hmm.
Your focus on change. What kind of change are you interested in?
I'm interested in instilling hope and inspiring people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm interested in people's dreams coming true. You know,
right.
You know, the word of God, as I believe it, you know, it says that a dream deferred makes the heart sick.
Okay, Langston Hughes and Bible.
Yes. And so, you know, I feel like that is a lot of the ills of the world, is that a lot of people's hearts are sick.
Yeah.
And
because they're not able
to
manifest into their highest self.
Right. Mm. And I've been in that space. I know what it's like to not believe in myself and feel like I can't, and to have those dreams deferred. And so that became what I wanted to change. And I wanted to see us come together in unity. And I felt that at that time, to be a congresswoman or a senator would be the way that I do that.
So why didn't you keep going there?
So at the time,
that's the way to make the biggest change, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, you know, but being in those spaces, I was like, change happens real slow and it takes a lot of work and exchange of resources, goods, and ideas for it to happen so slowly. And so I was also, my Spanish was my minor, and I had an opportunity to go abroad and go and study in Costa Rica for 3 months.
Mm.
And I also had the opportunity to go doing some research with some kids in Sunnyside of Houston at ProVision Academy. Shout out ProVision. It's an excellent school. And I chose to do, what do you think I chose? Yes, I chose to do the research. Because who wants to go and live in Costa Rica for 3 months? No, apparently not me. And so the research was like, so in Sunnyside, what people at the time thought was the most drug-ridden, violence-ridden, poor community, African-American communities in Houston. This is what people said about and believed about it. It had the highest topographical point in Houston, where you can stand there and see Channel View, you can see the ports, you can see downtown Houston, you can see everywhere. And so we had this idea, like, what if we brought kids up there before and after their standardized test to see how their conceptions of self influence their testing ability.
Right.
And so it was working with those kids in that project that made me realize this is where the change happens, and it happens quickly here, and this is where it needs to happen.
Wow.
So that was the beginning of my journey in education.
Okay. And so you get into social studies, education, and you did your PhD and you write your dissertation. What was your dissertation about?
So my dissertation was about how rural schools in Texas are experiencing school reform. And
oh,
so
wow.
What Texas calls it is turnaround. So you take the schools that are quote unquote failing and you send in managers hired by the state, and they are supposed to fix the students, fix the schools, and fix the scores.
Right.
And so, but what I saw happening in Texas was this exodus of Black folks out of the cities and around industry infrastructures back into these rural settings. So I felt like it was important for us to understand how this is different, how rural education and school reform has specific considerations that Texas must look at
right.
and understand before trying to blanket a school reform curriculum and process on a community without understanding it.
Right. Oh, wow. Any particular points of discovery that you kind of walked away with
mm-hmm.
That, you know, helped to inform any of your approaches now?
Mm-hmm. Well, one, I was really shocked because I thought they were going to say, we hate this school reform. We don't like it. But, you know, my participants said, no, we understand the need for it and we want change and we need the change.
Mm-hmm.
But what we need you to understand is our history and where we come from
right.
and what we know about ourselves today. And we need people who are going to get into the conversation with us and not speak and heap things upon us that don't necessarily consult our personal identities, ways of being, doing, and seeing. And it's not that we don't want to change and that we're not willing to change, but we need you to come with a heart of understanding.
Right.
Was probably the most crucial thing, which in the process of reform, it's typically just how fast can I do something? It's very Henry Ford, assembly line.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So you've also now added one more stop to the travel. Now mm-hmm. you're in Northwest Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're a professor at the University of Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
How are you finding this journey, and how is all that you've experienced, you know, informing what you do now mm-hmm. as a professor?
Yeah. You know, leaving the University of Houston, I went to the University of Texas at Austin, got my master's in curriculum and instruction in social studies. And so I've always loved history, I've always loved social studies, and I've always had this idea for the past being a prologue to the future.
Mm-hmm.
And
the past ain't even the past.
Right, it's living, right? And so at the University of Texas at Austin, you know, we really focused on urban education and what it means to be an urban educator. And so, but, you know, the word urban, I feel, is just a word to denote race.
Right.
Composition of race in a place.
Yeah,
not
it's
necessarily
a synonym now for race.
Right.
Yeah.
Not just a geographical location based on the population density. And so, you know, so working there at... In Manor, following graduation from University of Texas at Austin, I worked at a project-based learning school where I got to dream with my students. I got to create things. You know, we put together a play, Poetic Monologues of the African Diaspora, and we went from ancient kingdoms of Mali to today. And my students wrote poems. So this idea of producing and co-constructing knowledge with my students became something that was like a bedrock for me as an educator.
Right.
And then I went abroad. I went to China, and I taught in China for a year. I taught Korean and Chinese students American history. And so that challenge, like if had I not gone to China prior to all the talk about China today and prior to COVID, I never would have went and I never would consider going back. But it was an amazing opportunity, and I'm glad I took it because it helped me understand as a Black woman the privilege that I have
right.
As an American, even if I don't have all the privileges of a Black woman in America. And so when I came back I got my PhD at Baylor, and then now I'm here. And so I'm taking that same mold of global interconnectedness of co-constructing knowledge, and I'm taking it into teacher education and bringing up the next generation of teachers in a way that they can prioritize global interconnectedness and realizing that our fates are tied together, and to also dream with their students and co-construct knowledge with their students. So I've been having a blast, you know, just seeing what the current state of the field is in terms of how novice teachers and pre-service teachers are thinking about education today.
Wonderful. And you mentioned now that you're here in Fayetteville, mm-hmm. how are you finding Fayetteville? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what do you like about Fayetteville?
It's beautiful. Mm. It's beautiful. Like when I first came here, it's very hilly. When I first came here for my interview, they're like, we might do a walking tour. And I'm like, dang, I don't know how big this campus is. And I only bought my little hills. So let me ride on to Walmart. And so in Austin, I was a cyclist. So I was like, I saw y'all had the rentable bikes here. So I'm just going to ride. Baby, I didn't know what I was getting into.
Rented a bike?
I rented a bike. And rode up this hill right here, okay, with this stop sign. I was like, pedal, damn it. Like, right past here. And went to the Walmart, wherever it is, down yonder. And I was cussing myself out. And I was psyching. I was like, I'm not going to get this job. Like, because I'm here on this hill. I'm like Sheila going up the mountain, okay? I'm going up here to save my marriage. No, I'm going up here to get this job. But, you know, I loved the nature of it. And I loved the fact that I made it through. And to me, that was a sign of what was going to be my experience here, was that I was going to make it through. The people are kind so far. You know, I feel like folks are trying to be progressive and move with the cloud of the times. And there's a lot to do between Bentonville and Fayetteville and Rogers and Springdale. So I'm having a good time so far. And I got to be a part of this awesome podcast, Living My Dreams, talking on the radio, you know. And while, again, being a teacher educator, bringing up the next class of educators to be.
Okay. So our audience, to our listening audience, you know, they're familiar with my voice, you know, having been here over a number of seasons. And
shout out.
I try to mix my academics with a little bit of comedy and mm-hmm. popular culture. I don't know how well I pull that off. My students don't seem to think I'm that funny in class, but I keep on pressing on. you know, what can our listeners expect from you? What do you bring to this podcasting space? What do you want to? We've already heard about, you know, how you grew up mm-hmm. and your travels and the things mm-hmm. that you're concerned about yeah. and what you like and, you know, yeah. You know, your research and your work. Mm-hmm. What can listeners expect from you in this podcast and space?
I think they can expect that I'm going to bring as much knowledge that I have, but that I don't have all the knowledge. And so when I can make references to what I know out in social media and the pop culture or movies that I've watched or music that I've listened to, I'm definitely going to incorporate it, because I'm a doctor and I think I'm pretty smart, but I'm not that, I don't know everything. I'm not that smart. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, so I'm not a know-it-all, but I will bring what I know based on my experience, and that's all that I can speak from.
Yes. And so based on your experience, let's stick a pin there, because you're bringing Liam Neeson particular set of skills, baby,
okay.
you know, don't to this thing. What is the biggest misconception that people have about your field of expertise?
About my field of expertise? Biggest misconception?
About education.
I think that, that we're trying to indoctrinate immediately comes to mind.
Yes.
You know?
That's what's in the zeitgeist at the moment. I mean, your field, I don't know, the black is hot. over there.
Hot. Okay. Don't be riding around these education streets without your bulletproof vest on. Yeah. And I hesitate to say that because education is, in a way, indoctrination. And so I think the misconception, though, is that we're trying to indoctrinate people to believe political things.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, in what I'm doing with my teaching, with my educators, is I am indoctrinating them to believe that all of their students can achieve and that they can indoctrinate their students with that belief.
Mm-hmm. Is there, I know, you know, my block is hot as well.
You're
in social studies. I'm a historian.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is there ways I try to, when I'm in my classroom, I try to go about how I teach in very particular and specific ways so as to, you know, make my learning as... not based on the subjectivity of my mm-hmm. beliefs
right.
that I think is the concern
mm-hmm.
for parents and maybe other policymakers out mm-hmm. there. I try to do that in specific ways so that that is not an issue. And the way that I do that, you know, especially when it comes to, you know, we teach difficult subjects,
yes.
you know, about mm-hmm. equity and race.
Mm-hmm.
And by and large, we have to do that.
Right.
Right. Students are bringing up these mm-hmm. topics. These
Every
are
day.
Topics that are part of any, it would, we would run afoul of any kind of evaluation or mm-hmm. any kind of accreditation
mm-hmm.
if we were to develop syllabi that did not address these kind of significant issues,
for sure.
right? And what kind of a training would we be giving our students mm-hmm. as individuals and as people
right.
where they're incapable of having hard conversations,
right.
whether with their friends
yeah.
or their family
mm-hmm.
or in their jobs,
mm.
right? They mm-hmm. have to have that practice
yeah.
somewhere.
And this is a safe place to do
and
it.
And that's a safe
it's
place
to
do it, right?
Yeah.
So when it comes to, you know, in my class where, you know, I might be teaching about race or class mm-hmm. or gender or whatever the case might be, you know, I use primary sources.
Yeah.
Right? I use primary sources to act as a catalyst and mm-hmm. a buffer, mm-hmm. right? That mm-hmm. means I'm embedding students in the actual artifact.
Right.
With the actual source.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not starting off with my view or mm-hmm. whatever the case might be. And,
mm-hmm.
you know.
That's powerful.
Yeah. So there are sources that might allow students to see these issues, to mm-hmm. talk about it, to address it, right? Take us away from ourselves,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And for students to take them away from themselves so they
yeah.
can learn sometimes about others,
right?
Right? And it's not based on some kind of a biased or distorted understanding. They're
mm-hmm.
interacting with this source. Mm-hmm. They're living text.
Yes.
Ooh. Right?
Yes,
you know, telling their firsthand experience. So
mm-hmm.
I could
mm-hmm.
embed them in a database of oral histories
yes.
or images or these kinds of things.
Right.
And it teaches students a lot of things that are valuable.
Right.
Studies and data show us that students who build these skills, they're
mm-hmm.
going to develop empathy,
mm-hmm.
emotional intelligence,
yes.
resilience by these kinds of encounter. And these are the skills that they're going to need for leadership.
Exactly.
You know? And that's why students in the humanities and these kinds of disciplines do so well across
mm-hmm.
time as leaders
mm-hmm.
because they're having these kinds of encounters. So,
right.
you know, the job that you're doing, you know, especially with social studies
mm-hmm.
in helping the teachers, it's important in cultivating the students and the people and the citizens of tomorrow
mm-hmm.
that we want to be who
right.
has those kinds of capacity.
Yes, definitely. You know, and the particular way I like to do it as well, you know, so introducing these primary sources and sourcing out our students' understanding, significance, continuity, and change,
mm-hmm.
You know, making moral judgments, all those historical thinking skills.
Mm-hmm.
But then I want to see how you understand how do you believe knowledge is best produced?
Right.
How do you demonstrate what you know? And so I give a lot of flexibility, and I encourage my students to, if your goal is to be a podcaster, then take the knowledge that you've learned, mm-hmm. analyze it, synthesize it with the readings and people that we've talked about, and create a podcast with it.
Right.
You know, if you are a dancer, give me some interpretive dance and then show me in your paper how the movements that you did were mm-hmm. interpretive or an explanation of what you were trying to get across to the viewer. And so I love to dream with my students and give them opportunities to explore careers that they're interested in through my work in my class. Mm-hmm. And so often, though, you know, you have to engage in the productive struggle of that. You know, sometimes students are like, can I just write a paper? Mm-hmm. And you may, if that's your strength.
Right.
But I want to see some creative writing, or I want to see a great analysis or a research paper, you know.
Yeah.
So pushing them into that rigor of self as well as with the content.
Okay. All right. Okay. Let's ask you now. That was great, especially for listeners, right? Let's get through some rapid fire questions.
Pew, pew, pew.
Pew, pew, pew.
Shots fired.
If you had to describe yourself as an animal, which would it be?
An elephant.
Ooh.
Yes. They're wise, they're leaders, they're communal, but they will also go to war.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. TF.
I guess I would be.
What about you? Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'd be like a leopard.
A leopard. Ooh, why?
I don't even know. I just want to.
Is it the print for the girls?
I think I just want to be out there flouncing around.
With that tail, okay?
Climbing trees.
Yes, okay.
In the water.
A swimmer. Okay,
you're in these savannas.
Okay.
Doing the most.
All right, so you can make it in multiple type of environments.
That's right.
All right, I love that.
Ain't no crocodile or alligator going to eat me, baby.
Facts.
I'm going to take a crocodile up a tree.
Okay. I see you, leopard.
What's your favorite movie?
Color Purple. It's a family favorite. I say it like that, but like, you know, it's the trauma, but it is, you know, you might hear me quote, you know, like random things from there when
you
I
tell Harpo to
that's
beat
what came
me.
To mind, but I'm like, dang, why the trauma one immediately? Nettie!
Or you do this one.
Wait. God.
I put a hex on you.
No. What you done to me, I already done to you. Any mail come today?
I see you've seen that quite a lot.
Yes, it is a female fan favorite, and it was just the source of so many jokes between my mom, my sister, and I that it is still the reigning favorite.
I could just imagine the quotes around you guys. Mm-hmm. Wow. I'd probably say my favorite movie is it for the congregation. I'm going to say Malcolm X, but for me, I'm going to say Good Will Hunting.
Okay. Why did you like Good Will Hunting? Was it the math?
Oh my goodness. I like the writing, and I really like the main character energy that Matt Damon brings, you know, in terms of he's this genius and his trauma, he's struggling to overcome it. And Robin Williams is one of my favorite actors.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the interaction between them two as they're trying to overcome this trauma. And, you know, here he is a genius and all the professors and whoever in the schools doubt him. But
that's a message for y'all. Okay. Your trauma can cover or overshadow your genius. So work through that, please. We need you in therapy.
Oh, yes. What star sign are you?
I'm a Capricorn.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't know whether I'm a Aquarius Pisces cusp.
So I'm a Capricorn because I'm on the cusp.
Are you?
Yeah. I'm on the last day of the Capricorn year, and the next day is the first day of the Capricorn year. I mean, Aquarius year. But I definitely identify.
Is that what that means? I thought, okay, so I am born February 18th, so that's the last day of Aquarius, first day of Pisces.
Mm-hmm. It's the first day of
Pisces.
The next day is the first day of Pisces?
Yes.
Yeah, so you're on the cusp.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You're on
All
the
right.
cusp. Yep, I'm a cuss baby, but I definitely identify with being a Capricorn. I'm chill. I'm very business oriented, ambitious. I like to think that I have some wisdom, not necessarily knowledge, but wisdom that you know helps make others' lives better. Jesus, my words. My niece would say to her friends, if she's like, you know, if you need help, we can call my auntie. She'll give you 6 months in a plan. You'll be good. So that's the Capricorn in me.
What's your number on the Enneagram?
Ooh, I am a 8, I believe, a challenger.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm a 2.
You're helper. A 2? What, a helper? Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Look at you helping.
I'm trying to get to a different way.
No, we need our helpers. We need our hands, you know. You know, the challenger, if they're unhealed, they can try and make, you know, put their will on everybody. And, you know, but the healed challenger, they try and give space for everybody and realize leadership happens through sharing of power.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Heal me, Jesus. Heal me, Lord. He ain't through with me yet.
What would you do? What would be the first thing you'd do if you won the lotto?
Okay. I'm going to pay off my mama house.
Okay.
I'm going to...
That's a black kid dream right there.
I have to. I have to. They ain't making no more land, okay? So the land that we got, we going to pay off. I'd probably pay to put some things into trust. I would... set aside some money to invest in like a business in whatever industry right now in the time is popping. So probably like some tech in terms of computer chips or something like that. I'd have to sit and pray on it for a while.
You show up in a whole mess to the lotto place to collect your money.
Look, okay. All right. And say, give me my money.
The whole wig, like, give me my money. Face mask.
Run me my money.
If money wasn't a factor, what would you do with your time?
Travel, travel, travel. And I would travel and collect oral histories from people throughout the world.
Really?
Yep. Yep. Anthony Bourdain minus the ending of his life.
I love Anthony Bourdain. Yeah.
R.I.P.
I think for me, one of the things I like about myself, I like connecting people.
Yeah.
Like if I meet somebody. If I meet somebody or if I've had an experience or something, I'm like, oh, I think about that. I think this person would be good for this. Like, they should talk. Like, even my books on my bookshelf, like, I organize them in terms of, like, what if these authors spoke?
And they are. They are.
You know, what if they had a dialogue? What if
that's creative.
Marcus Garvey and Kwame Nkrumah actually talked. Yeah. Like, what would that
be? That matches
be?
With Beyonce's, you know, she says, like, you know, I got ancestors on the wall, let the ghost chit chat.
Oh,
you know,
I
so,
think
like,
that's a good
the
lyric.
Proximity that they kind of, you know, create and talk and influence the atmosphere. And so you never know. New ideas could be produced by how you're structuring your books. Hey, Beyonce.
And
no copyright.
And finally, what shows are you watching now? How are you?
Love is Blind. Love is Blind. You know, Chelsea on there acting a fool with her jealousy. You got AD and her boy, and he talking about, I might cheat and I'm scared. Well, you keep bringing it up. You're going to manifest it, bro. 90 Day Fiancé. I've been watching Griselda on Netflix. And so I'm like, okay, women power, but moving weight. Anyway,
I'm looking forward to the movie coming out, Magical Negroes.
I never heard of it.
Oh,
I want to be one. I am one.
Oh, well, it's is it the School of Magical Negroes or
it's
the
like Magic School Bus type of thing?
No, it's David Alan Greer. It's the American Society of Magical Negroes.
So is it like a Hogwarts for Negroes?
It's it seems to be
that'd be fun.
Like a comedy / like maybe I don't know if
parody
it's Afrofuturistic parody type
of
thing.
I love it.
Yeah.
I would love that. I that would definitely be something I would watch.
Yes. So I'm looking forward to that. I just saw American Fiction, which was interesting.
Oh my gosh.
And of course I'm watching 90 Day Fiancé because you know Angela Dean brought Michael over here for the people, and he ran away in less than 3 months.
Really?
So, yes, he ran away and the police. She reported him missing.
Am I missing an episode?
He called the. It's on the social media.
Oh.
He called the police and was like, "I'm not missing. Angela threatened me, and so I ran away."
Jesus. Ladies, don't date men who are scared of you. Don't if he lets you run all over him, you're probably going to be running over him for the rest of your life. Mm. Choose a man. Who was it? My girl, Jilly from Philly. She said, if you
can tell me what to do, then you can tell me what to do. But if you can't tell me what to do, then you can't tell me what to do. Okay.
Message.
Message for the people. That was such a good answer.
That was good. We did that, though. We hit that.
Why are we watching this?
Look. Black culture. Universal. Global.
Oh, my God. So, we are so very happy to be having our new co-host join us and for her to add and for us to think alongside each other and with you, our audience. Yeah. We encourage you to submit questions to us in on social media, on Spotify, and we will respond to your questions as parts of our episode, in one of our episodes to you. So we want to interact with you. Yeah. We want to talk to you. We want to get to know who you are as well. So we will look forward to that, and we look forward to this season with our new co-host.
Yes, I'm so glad to be here. I really am. You all are fun. I got my producer and my co-host here, and then an amazing audience. So, yes, submit questions, submit topic suggestions. We want to be in conversation and dialogue with you, and it's important that we're interconnected. So I'm glad to be here with you and be undisciplined.
All right. Undisciplined, baby. Thank you for listening to another riveting episode of Undisciplined. This episode was hosted by Kari Banton and Carnesia Connor. It was produced by Leah Grant. Undisciplined is a collaboration between the African-American Studies Program at the University of Arkansas and KUAF. It is available every other Wednesday at KUAF, on Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Follow the African and African American Studies program and the Undisciplined podcast on Instagram at @UARK_AAST or visit KUAF.com to listen to all episodes.
If you liked today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts and rate us.